Well, summer is in full gear and fall not nearly close enough, but we thought it a good time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible tonight by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. Again, that's 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, glad to have you back again.
I'm glad to be back, Bill.
So we like to start off our program if we have submitted material. And unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of submitted material this time, except for the stuff that I sent you from a recent trip that I made back home. So we're going to start off with some images that are up on our website right now at redriverradio.org. Just click on the What's Bugging You post for today, and you'll get to see these images and go along with us as well. But in the meantime, we hope you'll call in at 800-552-8502 with your own questions about our local insect world. So while up in Ohio, I was going out on a photo shoot, just, you know, an amateur photographer, and I happened to spy these beautiful little white butterflies. I believe, you know, it's hard for me to tell sometimes moth butterfly, but they were white and they had tiny little specks on them. And they were flitting all over the place. It was hard for me to I had to shoot I don't know how many shots just to get one to come into focus. But tell me in that photo that you see, there's two white butterflies, and then there's another small little bug at the bottom of that image. And what are we spying there?
Well, there's the two white butterflies, but I want to say a little something about them. They are in the family that we call Pieridae. And the butterflies that are in that family are either white or they're yellow. And we believe that it's the yellow butterflies that give the butterfly their name. The reason being, in Europe and in northern climates, one of the first crops they grow every spring is alfalfa. And then they start feeding this fresh alfalfa to the cows, and the cows start producing higher quality milk. Mm-hmm. And so... which means it's also going to have higher quality fat content, hence butter. And so these are the butterflies.
Oh, okay.
The other reason people think that they might be called butterflies is that they started out by being flutterbys.
Ah.
And then it got switched.
They do flutter.
Yeah, they do flutter.
So is there a common name for these?
Whites are sulfurs.
Okay.
Sulfur for the yellow ones, because the element sulfur is yellow.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're quite pretty and quite elusive to try to photograph. Now, down in the bottom mm-hmm. of that, I saw a slightly tinge of blue on that image, and I thought it was a dragonfly, but you've informed me it's of a similar group, but mm-hmm. not exactly a dragonfly.
Yeah, they're called damselflies, and they are very closely related, and they are predators of other flying insects, just like dragonflies are, and their immatures are also both aquatic. The big difference is the dragonflies hold their wings horizontal, where the damselflies hold their wings vertical over their back. And the other difference is their eyes. If you look at the head of a dragonfly, the head is almost entirely composed of the eye with the two little antennae, and sometimes the eyes even touch and meet. Whereas these, their eyes are on either side of their head. Just picture what a hammerhead shark looks like, and if on either end would be an eye, then that's the way damselflies are. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous little guys.
They absolutely are. Now, we also have another picture up there, and that I'm not sure what the flower is, but I didn't even know I had caught that image of that little bug on this flower until I got home and started looking at the photographs in all of my collection there. It's kind of a pretty little round shape, almost oval shaped bug, and but not quite sure exactly what it is.
Yeah, at first you have to realize when you look at this picture that what you're looking at is the rear end of the bug.
Yeah.
And because some people might look at that and think that that might be the head, but that's the rear. And it is in the same family as the June bugs. They're called scarabs, just like the scarab beetles that the ancient Egyptians worshipped.
Okay.
And that's a cool story, too, if we ever want to tell that. And so I believe it's called the the emerald scarab, and they do feed on plants, and some of them are actually pests, like the rose chafer is a big pest of roses, and they all belong in the same family. And so, but yeah, insects can be so gorgeous. You know, you think of Mother Nature's palette, color palette, and insects, I think, show it off as well or better than any other group of organisms.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have our first call online right now. Leon from Bossier City, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight? Hello, Leon.
Your show is so great.
Well, thank you.
So much. I've got a question about what I call the American cockroach.
Yes, sir.
That great big sucker that comes in and out of the house periodically.
Uh-huh.
What is their lifespan? 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 weeks? Or?
It can be up to 8 weeks, 2 months.
What?
Yeah, I tell people that, you know, there are hundreds of species of cockroaches, but only a handful lower themselves to live with humans. And of those handful, you can easily classify the cockroaches based on their size. They're large, medium, and small. And you're absolutely right. The American cockroach, the scientific name is Paraplantia americana, is one of the larger cockroaches. Now, there's one that's as large as that. But if you look at the head area, if you're looking at the cockroach from above, you can't really see the head. There's a little covering, and it's going to be dark brown with a light circle around the edges. That's the American cockroaches. If it doesn't have a light circle around the edges, it's just solid brown. That's the smoky cockroach, and you'll hardly ever see those inside. But you have to look at that ring around the covering of the head. And then the medium ones are something that we call oriental cockroach, but a lot of people also call them water bugs. And they're easily seated because they normally don't have their wings fully developed, so you can see the segmented of their abdomens. And then the tiniest one and the worst one of all, you know, it's always the tiny ones that are worst. Those are the American cockroaches. Excuse me, those are the German cockroaches. And the covering of their head will have brown stripes on it. And so that's how you can tell the three cockroaches apart that would like to share our habitats. And the best way to treat your house for cockroaches is the use of boric acid powder. And it works really, really well. You just spread it around the edges of walls and stuff, and they crawl through it, and then they clean themselves just like a cat would, and it's a stomach poison for them. So, Leon, did you have anything else?
I'm 72 years old, and it seems to me that I remember hearing from somebody, and I have senior moments periodically, that that big sucker, that American cockroach, does not want to live in your house. He's just passing through. He lives outside. Is that correct?
For the most part, yes, it is true. Now, given the right situation at the right time, if there's enough food, if somebody is not don't tidy up their kitchen, they will hang around, and also they'll come into the houses and search for moisture, especially this time of year when it's so hot and so dry. But you can find them in dwellings, in houses, but they occur just as well in nature, if you will, by themselves. Yes, sir.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you all so much for your show. I enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Leon. Thanks for the call.
You bet.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have four lines open right now, so you'll get in fairly quickly. 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Again, 800-552-8502. We're going to go next to Coco from Avery, Louisiana. Coco, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Yeah, I had a question about, she might not like my question.
I try not to judge, Coco.
Okay, because I like these insects, I want you to know that, but I have these leaf cutter ants in my house.
Oh my gosh.
I love watching them.
Yeah, the problem with leaf cutter ants is, yes, they can defoliate a tree, but their biggest problem is the size of their their colonies, their nest, yeah, if you will.
Yeah, they decided to dig up around my shed. And, like, they're starting to bury my equipment and stuff like that. I'm not exaggerating.
No, I've seen it. I've heard it. People have basically been driving over an area where there's leafcutter ants, and literally the tractor just basically sinks 3 feet or more down into the soil where their colonies are.
I have really sandy soil, so, like, it's a concern for me with, like, erosion and all kinds of, but mostly they're just burying all my stuff.
Yeah, and there's not an easy way to treat them either. What you probably have to do more than anything else is just act as a deterrent, and you might just try a general pesticide and see if that would work. Something like I would try either 7-Dust or 7-Liquid and spray the area with that. That's a carbaryl type of insecticide, and it's a good general all-purpose, and it might take care of them for you. But
I've been trying to get rid of them, and I can't. Nothing gets them.
They're very stubborn, and every time I get a leaf cutter ant call, my sympathy just pours out because they're very, very difficult to control. And I wish I could tell you more, but I can't.
Well, that's good to know. I'm going to keep trying, I guess.
Okay. Thanks for
stay vigilant.
Thanks for your call, Coco.
Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. All our lines are open right now, so you'll get right in at 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502.
Let me, since we're waiting for a call, let me just follow up with a couple comments about the leafcutter ants. What these ants are doing is that they're taking them down into their burrows, down into their nest, and they do not eat the leaves, but they use the leaves to grow a fungus, and it's the fungus that they eat, which is actually rather uncommon in nature because there's not a lot of nutrition in the fungus world. So it's kind of interesting that way.
But obviously something about the fungi that they're growing is obviously nutritious to
them.
And they're farmers, and basically.
Yes, they are farmers.
If you think about that, or at least botanist of a sort. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. While we're waiting for the next call to come through, we had one more, actually two more pictures there. And one was a little guy that just kind of lost himself right on my front patio. And that is, I believe, a cicada exoskeleton. So tell me, I see sometimes these little guys just buzzing around on the ground. It's like they're in a death thrall. And then I'll see those all over the parking lot of the apartment complex where I live. What's going on with the exoskeleton, and what about this death roll that they seem to go into?
That's when they're in the process of dying, that they just don't have enough energy to take flight.
Mm-hmm.
And now is the time that we're seeing a large die-off of the area cicadas. Some people here locally might call them locusts, but they're actually cicadas. Only the people of the South call them locusts. And so they are in a big die-off right now. And this is an adult cicada. The reason that there wasn't anything inside of it, and it was just the exoskeleton, because once they die, the fire ants get to them very quickly.
Okay.
And the fire ants will get in there and take out all the insides and eat and take that back to their nest and eat it. And so it's just the cycle of life, you might say. And but there's some are still emerging, a few are, but the peak emergence is gone, and now we're starting to see a decline.
So that's southern fried cicada then for the fire ants.
Yes, it is, yeah.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open at 800-552-8502. We go next to Ron from Atlanta. Ron, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. What can I do to make my home less hospitable to those big, ugly brown wolf spiders?
Oh, well, one thing is you got to figure out how they're getting in. And even though they're large, if you can see if you can see light underneath the door, then they can actually crawl through that. So you need to seal up your entryways. And they're not, just like Leon was saying about the American cockroach a while ago, when wolf spiders get into your house, they are lost. I guarantee you, they do not want to be in there because there's nothing to predate on, and there's normally no natural coverage and habitat for them. So you got to seal up your doorways. That's what you got to do.
Awesome. I will do that.
Thank yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ron. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Kelly from Shreveport. Kelly, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Silverfish are bugging me. After 21 years in the same house, I suddenly, 7 months ago, started seeing dead silverfish. They are dead. I found a few live ones. I've done the boric acid. I do have recurring pest control come to my house, but 7 months later, I'm still having dead silverfish all over my bathrooms and at several places. What else can I do? And why did this happen after so many years?
Well, my guess is that you may have a plumbing problem, that they're Ooh. Attracted to the water. And you know, as we know, plumbing problems can come about very gradually. And it may be as something as simple as needing to replace a washer on the faucets of your sink in the bathroom. And so, but the thing is, I have silverfish in my house too, but I don't care because they don't bother me. And I just vacuum them up when they die. And I don't really see that many dead ones. I'll see live ones scooting from here and there, but I just let them be. And so, but if they're bothering you, then you need to do something about them. Now, what that could be, I would definitely look into the water situation. And if that's a problem, get that fixed. If not, you say the boric acid isn't working for you?
Well, when I find them, they're dead. So
yeah.
I guess it's working, but it's not getting them. It's not getting into the walls. This is I have a two-story house, and if there's a water leak, it's going to be somewhere in the walls that I can't see.
Right.
So,
Yeah. Well. Yeah. The boric acid is working then since you're seeing so many dead ones. The question is, where are the living ones? And
yeah.
they're probably in the walls too. It's an older home, I assume.
Almost 30 years, not terribly old, but yes,
yeah,
a little older.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so
kind of out near the woods.
Yeah,
so.
It's a perfect place for silverfish. And you know, silverfish are one of the most primitive of all the insects. In fact, there's been some people that argue that they're actually not insects, but I don't listen to those people because they have six legs and they fit all the other categories of insects. But that's that's their problem, not mine. And so. At least they're not doing any damage to your house. They're not like termites.
That's true. It's rumored that if they get into clothing, they will damage clothing. Is that true?
They might stain the clothing, you know, with their, you know, when they go to the bathroom. But my biggest concern about silverfish is if you have any older books, because they like to eat the glue on the bindings, and
yes.
so. The last time we had a show, it was when I was doing the Master Naturalist program. There was a student in there who was an antique bookseller, and those people are horrified when they mm-hmm. see a silverfish in their library.
Right.
And so,
yeah.
inside the home, that's the major damage they can do. And in older times, when they used to use natural glue for cardboard boxes, then they would eat that natural glue off of the cardboard boxes. The same deal. They like starch, a lot of starch items.
Okay. Yeah. That's all good to know. Thank you so much. First time listener, so I'm really enjoying your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. You can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. The only place that I've ever seen silverfish has been in books.
Mm-hmm.
Old books, open
mm-hmm.
them up and, you
there
know,
they
you
are.
Fall one, a dead one usually, you know, flattened. And, you know, I learned about that when I was a kid because we had lots of old books around. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go next to Mac from Bossier City. Mac, you're on with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes, I heard y'all talking about the leaf cutter ants, and I was had an anecdote, and I wanted to see if you could tell me the veracity of what I have or my experience. I had had some liquid fire, which is sulfuric acid, and I was trying to do that experiment where you dehydrate it and it turns to carbon, but it's not concentrated, so I ended up with just a kind of a messy thing of sulfuric acid and sugar, but I did this over an ant bed. It was gone the next day.
Okay. You would have to use you have to be careful with sulfuric acid. Depends on its concentration. If it's heavily concentrated, even the odors can damage the lining of your mucous membranes of your respiratory tract.
This is a cleaning grade.
Yeah.
Like for sink cleaning.
Well then it may not be the best thing for the environment though to go pouring sulfuric acid on ant beds. But if somebody's desperate enough and they want to try that, then sure. I would think it would be a deterrent. That's very interesting. I'm glad you shared that with us. What else you got, Mac?
That was about it. That's the first time I'd really got to call in.
Well, I'm glad you did, and thanks for the comment. I find that very interesting.
Thank you.
All right, and you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Paul and Mark, please stay on the line. We're going to get to you in a moment, but Leon is calling back from Bossier. Leon, you're on with Dr. Burden again. What's bugging you?
Question about the boric acid.
Mm-hmm.
May I put it on the exterior part of the house and it be a deterrent, or do I have to put it inside the house?
If you put it on the outside of the house, then it may actually kill them to keep them from getting inside the house. The only problem with outside of the house is that once it gets wet, it's inactivated. And so after a rain or maybe a heavy humidity, you'd have to reapply. And so if you put it inside the house, then it's going to get the ones on the inside. The thing about cockroaches is they like to be touching something all the time. In biology, we call it positive thigmotaxis. And mice are that way. That's why you find them running along the edges of rooms. And that's why we put the boric acid along the edges of the rooms. And so you can give it a try outside. It might help you out a little bit, Leon.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Sorry to bother you. It's my second call.
No problem.
Some of the guys have called in. It was their first call.
Right. You're a lucky guy. Two in one night.
I am indeed. Thank you. Good night.
Good night,
Leon. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we're going to go to next to Mark and then Paul and Chris. Please hang on the line. We'll get to you in just a moment. We're going to Mark from Carthage. Mark, what's bugging you tonight?
Oh, yeah. Y'all are probably going to get a lot of cockroach questions tonight. Hey, this call is about German cockroaches.
Yeah.
Okay, I've actually got them in my semi-truck.
Oh, my gosh.
I tell you what, that's the worst bug, as far as I'm concerned, that I've ever had to deal with. That question about that other guy had about boric acid,
mm-hmm.
Can I put that in containers and put them, like, in the shelves and maybe up underneath the bunk without me getting sick? I don't have no pets or nothing with me in my truck, but I was just wondering, is it safe to do that?
Two things. One, boric acid is relatively safe for both humans and pets, and so that safety is not an issue when you're dealing with boric acid at all, unless you ate a whole bunch of it. And but the problem with putting it in containers is in order for it to work, they have to crawl through it. And so that's why we put it down where we know that they might be crawling, so that they can crawl through it. And with a heavy infestation, of German cockroaches, that actually may not be enough. You may actually want to do, and these sometimes aren't that effective, but I would think in the cab of a truck, a bug bomb where it goes off and it releases aerosols in the air might be better, as long as it says that it's formulated for German cockroaches. And those and every pesticide can, spray bottle, whatever, has to oftentimes say, this is good for such and such insects, but not for other insects. And so,
okay, so that's probably a good idea then. Maybe I ought to go with the German cockroach bomb first and just open up all the shelves and everything, so if I can get rid of them like that. And if not, well, can I just spread like a thin layer, like if I'm not in the truck, I'm off for the weekend, just spread a thin layer on the floors or whatever, and then I might get rid of them then, huh?
Yes. Yes, I would hit them with both barrels, both the boric acid and the bomb.
Okay, well, that sounds good. I appreciate it. This is like a godsend, me actually talking to y'all about this. Maybe I can get rid of this bug problem I got. I appreciate y'all.
Good luck. Right.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Chris, please stay on. You're next, right after Paul from Marshall. Paul, what's bugging you tonight?
Hey, guys. Long-time listener. Had a question about scorpions not so prevalent in East Texas. What determines where a scorpion is going to live? Is it a soil type, or a climate type, or what attracts scorpions?
Well, it depends on the species of the scorpion. You know, out in the southwestern part of the United States, they have a completely different type of scorpion that we have here in our listening area. And basically, it's two things. One, it is the habitat, and it is the soil, because it depends on what plants grow. And that's important, because that will determine what prey items would be available for them. And so they're predators, but they have to have the right prey, and the prey have to have the right habitat to live in. And so it's basically, you have to have a good ecosystem fit for them. Now, they do like open areas a lot, as well as wooded areas, but they don't like urban areas that much. A lot of times when I get calls from with problems with scorpions, is when they build a new subdivision and they basically destroy their habitat, but the scorpions are still there, and that's why they're getting in the houses. Luckily, the scorpion that we have here in our listening area, it's venomous for sure, but it's not deadly. It would be nothing worse than a wasp or a hornet sting. And so,
I remember when I was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, stepping on one. You never forget that.
No.
But I haven't seen many. I live in an old area in Marshall, and it may be why. But what do they, okay, they're predators, so what do they prey on?
They'll feed on anything they can find, mostly insects, sometimes other spiders, and I don't think that they would eat earthworms though, but normally it has to be, you know, crawling around, and then they'll attack, and scorpions are pretty cool. There's a unique thing about scorpions that a lot of people don't know, is if you shine a UV light on them, they will fluoresce and glow.
Really?
And
So
I tell a lot of people, if they want to find where the scorpion is hiding at during the day, because they're basically nocturnal predators, go out at night with the black light and look around their house, and one might light up. And then you might see where it's staying. It's pretty cool when you do it. And you can buy flashlights that are UV lights. Those are pretty common. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, I know it. But also, this time of the year, though, you have to realize, with it being so hot and dry, a lot of things, everybody understands hibernation, but there's the same thing that happens in the summer, where the insects kind of go dormant for a while, and that's called estivation. And a lot of the things right now with the heat and the dryness might be going into an estivated state. Kind of interesting.
Okay. Now, okay, just one last one last question.
Okay.
Lived in East Texas a long time and have seen years where ticks outside were horrendous, and then the rumor was that the fire ants killed a lot of them, and in the last couple of years they've been back in big numbers. So what determines a tick population, and does the fire ant have any part in that?
I've never heard of fire ants predating on ticks, making ticks their prey, but they're so voracious, I wouldn't rule it out. I just never have seen any documentation of it. The thing about nature is that they'll go in fluctuating cycles. They'll be up one year and down the other, and so this might just be a natural up cycle for them. You know, just like oak trees, every few years they'll just produce a horrendous amount of acorns, and then the next year they may not produce very many at all. And so it's just a part of the cycles of nature.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you, and you guys, thank you for your show. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have callers online right now. We're going to go next to Chris from Texas, and what's bugging you tonight?
Hey, thanks. I'm a first-time listener, and I'm really enjoying it. Darn, it's always my luck, but the previous caller answered a lot of my questions about, or had a lot of my questions. I like scorpions, and apparently they like me, and I find them in my bathtub, and I find them all over. It's good to know that they're not, as you said, deadly, but they are poisonous. So I like them. I live in a wooded area, and mm-hmm. there's stumps and stuff, and there's a whole bunch of them I notice outside, but I'm finding a lot of them in the house, and I always know they're there because the dogs get really excited about something. So my question is, what can I do? I really don't want to hurt them, but I don't want them hurting my animals.
Right. Well, first of all, you have to find out how they're getting inside your house. And I don't know if you were listening earlier in the show, but I have a standard thing that I say to people, and that is, if you can see light underneath your door, coming from the other side of the door, then scorpions can get into your house. So make sure you have your doors weather stripped very, very well and make it tight so they can't get in. That's normally the way that they're getting in. The other thing you can do is, you say you live in a wooded area, try to keep stacks of like firewood not up close to the house, because they really like to live in stacks of firewood. Make sure that it's that you clean up the peripheral part of your house. That might deter them a little bit too. And then if you don't want to kill them, I tell you, it's the doggonest thing I've ever seen. But you can take a pop bottle, a soda bottle. I don't want to say here in the South we just call them Coke bottles, because whether it's Dr. Pepper or whatever it is, that's just the way we are here in the South. And you can kind of on the bottom, just cut out about a half of the plastic, and you make it like a little scoop, and you can scoop those scorpions right up inside that, but they can't crawl out because they can't get traction on that slick plastic. Make sure it's the plastic slick, and then you may be able to just throw them in a bucket real quick, and then take them out and throw them back in the forest.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. They're really cool, actually. Just I don't want them, again, hurting the animals. I'm not so much.
I understand.
After you told the previous caller they weren't deadly, I'm like, well, then at least I don't have to be scared anymore.
No. Wasps or hornet bite, sting. Not
great.
A bite, a sting.
Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call, Chris.
Try that. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now. We're going to go next to Rob from Coushatta. Rob, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Thanks for taking my call. I have these ants invading my house, and they look a lot like carpenter ants, but they're not quite as heavy built. And they either black or reddish color, but they're about the size of a carpenter ant. I've never seen it like that before. they don't appear to be interested in anything like the food laying around the sink or anything like that. They just scamper everywhere. They don't eat food like the fire ants or sugar ants that get in the house do. So I don't know what kind they are or how to control them.
Yeah, I'd have to actually see us. Ants are very difficult to identify. With just a general description, if I have one in front of me, I can normally identify it. And if you want to take a picture of it and send it to Bill, we can definitely talk about it on the next show. But my guess, and I have every 5 years, I'll have an ant situation in my house too. The first thing you need to do is find out where the nest is. And luckily, we don't really have carpenter ants here in the South. Carpenter ants exist more in the northern area, and they don't eat the wood. They actually just excavate it, whereas the termites eat the wood. I always say that carpenter ants are the termites of the north, and then you can say it backwards for the south. But you need to find out how they're gaining entry into the house. So look at their trails and try to find out, follow the trails backwards. And if you can do that, then that's great. If you kind of know where you always see them, like mine would always come from my kitchen windowsill, I would take Vaseline petroleum jelly, and I would put it around that area, and that actually acts as a deterrent. They'll hit that Vaseline jelly, and then they don't want to crawl across it, and it'll turn them around and turn them back.
I'll give that a try.
Yeah.
They just wander around in no particular path. You know how fire ants will find food sources, and there'll be a highway of them things.
That's right.
Back and forth. These here just tend to wander around. They just have no, like they're getting in here in my house for just no reason other than the one. They don't sting. They don't appear aggressive or anything. They're just strange big ants. Like I said, they're black, and some of them are reddish color.
Yeah, it's almost like they're acting like a crazy ant. And there's a group of ants called crazy ants that have very erratic behavior. But they're not as large as you're describing. And so...
Yeah, those ants are very bad where my mother lives in Lafayette. They fried her air conditioner twice.
Oh, my gosh.
And another question. When I'm mowing my yard, I see these bugs come flying, or these bugs, as they come flying out of the grass. I think they're wasps. And then I look at them, they're really red and black. And for a minute, I'm thinking I stirred up a wasp nest in the grass, and then they disappear. But I see them all the time while I'm mowing, and I can't find any reference in none of my books about that. Do you have any idea what that could be?
What size are they?
I'd say about a half inch or so.
So they could be wasp.
They come up out of the grass when I'm mowing in front of me, and then they disappear. I look back, they're not there anymore, and they're not flying around or anything very high. They only get about, say, 6 inches above the grass.
That doesn't sound like a wasp to me at all. And beetles won't do that. It could be, it can't be chinch bugs because you would never see them very well with the individual eye.
These are very bright. They have a band of a red, and the middle band is red, and the each end is black.
Could they be grasshoppers?
I don't think so because they fly.
Yeah, well, grasshoppers fly. And there's a very small species of grasshoppers, and that would be my best guess. That would be my best guess.
They kind of freak you out when you're mowing grass.
I know.
So mowing grass, you stir up the yellowjacket's nest, and they hurt. And that's why I don't like to see things flying up on toward my lawn when I'm mowing. But I appreciate it, and I'll see if I can get y'all a picture of those ants and email them off everything, and I'll see what happens.
Yeah. Bill loves to get pictures, by the way.
Yes.
and then he shoots them to me, and then I shoot him back an answer, and then we put it on next month's show.
The email address is where I can mail them to, is online?
Yeah, I can give it to you now. It's just wbeckett@lsus.edu. Two T's on Beckett.
Yes, sir. I'll shoot my best as soon as I can.
All right.
And send me some of those grass flyers flying out of the grass, too. See if you can catch one of them.
I can do that, too, because I really enjoy the show. I've listened to it almost every episode since it came on the air, and I've called several times.
Thank you.
And y'all have a great evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We're going to go to our next call. I believe this is Charles from Waldo. Charles, what's bugging you tonight?
The carpenter ants are bugging me. I've got some wood pillars holding up the roof to the front porch, and I discovered that there was carpenter ants in them. and I sprayed down the pillars with insecticide that was specific to carpenter ants. It was made by Bayer, if I recall. And so I want to know, is that likely to have gotten rid of them, or do I have to worry that they've gotten into the whole house, or how do I deal with these critters?
Well, carpenter ants, if you have carpenter ants, they're not very common here in the South at all. And so until you start to experience and see structural damage, if they're around, you should be able to see them because they'll be coming and going.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if they're living in the pillar, then they've already done the damage.
Uh-huh.
And so at this point, I wouldn't worry about them.
Okay, so if they're still there, I'd see them coming in and out.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. I don't have a name for this caller, but you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's your name, please?
Hey, this is Trent Weaver, and I live in Longview, Texas.
Ah, hi, Trent.
Yeah, so I have a flea problem with my dog. I bombed my apartment a couple times, and it seems to be okay right now, but she just seems to always be scratching, and I use pretty good formula on her and things like that, but it seems to be a reoccurring problem.
You say you have a flea problem?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I would suggest that you take your dog to the vet, because they can give him a 6-month shot that works for fleas and other ectoparasites. And if you're giving her regular flea baths, then that should be taking care of the problem. But if she's still scratching, and I'm not a vet, but it sounds to me like she might have a skin problem, you know.
Well, I can find them under her coat, and I can see them crawling and pick them off. I walk around outside with some light-colored shorts, and I don't ever see them jumping on me, so I'm not sure if they're outside or anything. I don't have a huge backyard or anything, but I do treatments, and it just seems like they're very persistent.
Does your dog have a pretty thick coat?
Yes.
You might want to see about getting her groomed. If you go ahead and get her trimmed up, and she might actually like that here in the heat of the summer, having some of that hair off of her or him. And if you get them groomed, then the treatments might be able to penetrate more, and that might take care of the problem. That's just some of my thoughts. But also, the immature fleas don't feed on blood like the adult fleas do. They just feed on dead skin and things like that wherever the dog sleeps. So if she has a bed or a doghouse or something, you need to treat that for the immatures of fleas as well.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Walter from Marshall. Walter, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, actually, I'm from Gilmer, but that's okay.
Okay.
my wife and I have recently, in the last few evenings, noticed that we have acquired an infestation of what I call small Miller bugs.
Mm-hmm.
They're little brownish-looking bugs. You never see them during the day. But at night, when you turn the lights on or have the television going, we seem to have like 6 or 8 of them that just appear out of nowhere. And you can get rid of those, and the next evening there's 6 or 8 more. Any suggestions as to what they are or what we could do about them?
What room do you normally see them in, Walter?
What room do I sleep in?
No, what room do you normally see them? Do they appear?
I see them in the kitchen and the living room.
Okay. This is what I highly suspect. And by the way, I think it's fascinating that you use the word Miller, My mother would always call little small moths millers, and I've tried to research the origin of that, and I've never gotten very lucky at it. And so,
I think the saying actually originated back in the old grist mill times, and that was the type of bugs that lived, you know, where they ground corn and wheat, and you would see those type of bugs there, and they were associated with mills.
Okay.
You know, corn mills or wheat mills.
I totally buy into that. Absolutely. That's best. You have solved a curiosity of mine that I've had for a long time. Okay, but going back to your problem, there are little pantry moths. One is called the Indian mill moth, and they will eat any kind of organic food. I've had infestation twice in my pantry. One, they got into some dry pinto beans, and the other time they got into some pecans, and they can actually chew through Ziploc bags. The caterpillars can.
Ah.
The caterpillars can. So you can actually buy these like little fly cards, the sticky cards, and that will capture them. But what you need to do is you need to find where they're coming from. You need to open up your cabinets or your pantry and start taking everything out. And there's got to be a hot spot of what they're feeding on. And then you need to take out all the shelving that you can, because when they get ready to go from a caterpillar to a pupa, what they do is they'll crawl in behind boards, and they'll spin a little bitty silk, and there'll be a little bitty cocoon in there. And they're small. They're like, they would like be as small as like two or three grains of rice linked end to end. And so I severely think you have an Indian mill moth problem. So start researching that, and you got to find out what they're feeding on and where that is.
Okay.
And then start cleaning them out.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate it, and thank you so much. And I enjoy your show quite a bit.
Yeah. Good luck with that. And what I do is I have everything in my pantry that's like that. I have them very thick, like Tupperware. Or thick plastic walled little bins and carriers, and that keeps them from getting reinfesting.
Well, we may end up having to do that then.
Okay, good luck with that.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have time for a few more calls at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Liz from Lufkin. Liz, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, I am actually calling. So my in-laws live in San Antonio, Texas, and they've been having a terrible chigger problem this summer. Their fire ant infestations in their yards have gone away, but the chiggers have gotten worse. Is there a correlation between the two, and how best can they treat their yard other than just putting, you know, bug spray on themselves before going in the yard?
Oh, I do not like chiggers at all, and I don't know anybody who does. I'm sorry to hear that they have a chigger problem. I don't think there would be any correlation between having fire ants and having chiggers, or not having fire ants and having chiggers. But chiggers normally like to be in tall, grassy areas. And so I would start keeping that mold down, and maybe even use what we call a pyrethrin insect spray that's going to be safe for the any animals or pets that are out there, and just really attack the perimeter of their yard, unless they like live on 10 acres or something. And then take them out and then prevent them from coming back. So cutting the grass low, and which isn't always a good thing to do in the heat of the summer, but San Antonio is humid enough, it might probably be okay, and then treating it with a pyrethrin. Now, when you go to the store to buy an insecticide, read the active ingredients, and if it ends in the suffix THRIN, then you know it's a pyrethrin.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye. Good luck.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have time for a few more calls, so give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Bob from New Orleans. Bob, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, I'm calling about, I've got sort of a termite issue in mostly in one room of the house that I'm actually renting. And I was trying to figure out, we let the landlady know about the termite problem, but she lives out of the country and doesn't want to do anything about it until she's back here next spring. And in the meantime, we were just trying to figure out if there's some sort of low-budget, preferably natural remediation or mitigation, something we can do. I've heard about orange oil, started trying it out, but not sure if it's working out or if that's the best way to go.
Well, it's a shame she doesn't want to do anything about it, because the longer she waits, the worse it's going to get.
Right.
And most of the effective pesticides against termites, you have to have a license in order to apply them. And so unless you're willing to go out of pocket for a professional, exterminator, I was looking for the word exterminator, then you're not going to really be able to control the termites. The problem in New Orleans is that they have the natural subterranean termite that is native here, but they also have the invasive Formosan termite. And those colonies can get very, very large and very, very aggressive very quick. And so you might also want to contact your USDA office, and the person that has the most termite experience works for the department in Baton Rouge, and I can't think of his name right now. I can see his face, but the professor there is Greg Henderson, and he was actually brought in to control the Formosan termite. But contact your local extension agency and see what they can do for you, okay?
I see. Is there any way just on site to distinguish between
no.
the two kinds?
No, you need an expert to come in to distinguish between the two.
Okay. All right. We'll
not good news.
Research. Yeah, right. No, I guess it's been, she's known about it for some time and thinks that the problem's somewhat localized. I don't know. I sort of imagine if you got termites in the house, you probably don't want them anywhere. But
now, I wish I was talking to her. Because yeah. I set her straight. It's nothing. It's not localized, and it's only going to spread and get worse.
And they're eating her house.
And they're eating her house.
Right. Yeah. Oh, okay. We'll get on her some more about that. I appreciate your help, and I'm enjoying the show.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have calls online right now. We're going to go next to Mitch from Nacogdoches. Nick, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
I have some elderly neighbors that have bed bugs, and evidently it's just a horrible problem, and trying to figure out if you got any suggestions.
Oh. Just like with the last caller, you're going to have to get a professional exterminator out there. They're selling things right now that are called bed bug bags, but that doesn't really work at all. That's just a gimmick. And so don't get sucked into that scheme. The good news about big bugs is they don't transmit any diseases like mosquitoes and ticks and fleas. But they're very terrible. They are blood feeders, and they're a huge nuisance. And if you have enough bites during the night, it could start being a health issue just because you're feeling so bad. And so I would suggest that they get a professional exterminator out there. And they have some chemicals that they can use. But they also have some treatments that are non-chemical, where they basically seal off the house and raise the temperature of the house up to a certain temp. And I'm not sure what that is. And that will kill out the bed bugs too. Or it may take both of those things to get rid of a really heavy infestation. And let me just say this for the general public. Bed bugs used to not be a problem, but they are a problem now, and they're increasingly so. and never go into a hotel or a motel and take your luggage in there until you inspect the room. Pull the sheets off the bed and see if you see any brown spotting to where they might have defecated their blood meal. Look behind the paper on the wall, everything. You have to really inspect the room. And then if it's okay, go ahead and stay there. But and when you, if you go into a hotel and you don't know it has bed bugs, keep your luggage in the bathtub because they can't crawl up that porcelain. And so that way you don't take them home. That's all my, the advice I got for you, Nick. That's bad news.
One more question.
Okay.
You know, they've talked to some exterminators, but none of them guarantee the fact that they'll get rid of them. So that kind of makes me skeptical on whether they can actually get rid of them.
It's a tough problem. It's a very tough problem.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sorry.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist. We have two callers online. We're going to try to get to them quick. Brandy from Otis, you're on with Dr. Burden. Can you state your question pretty quickly?
Actually, it wasn't a question. It was a statement on the caller who called about the Indian moth.
Uh-huh.
I actually had an issue with this problem for years where I couldn't get rid of them. And I finally was able to, I had to go through and I had to get rid of pretty much all starches.
Mm-hmm.
And I used Dawn dishwashing liquid and vinegar mix and wiped down everything in my pantry. And after doing all that and not buying in bulk anymore, because that seemed to be where the problem was, I've been free of them for about a year and a half now.
Another thing that you can I do, whenever I buy flour or cornmeal, I put it in the freezer for 2 days, and if there is a small population in there, that will kill them off too. So, you did exactly the right thing.
I had read that as well because my mother used to buy in bulk all the time, and she also would store everything in the plastic, like you were talking about, but they were still finding a way into plastic containers, so I just had to get rid of everything.
Yeah,
and just kind of start all over, clean all your cans off, all that kind of stuff, because the cocoons were everywhere. The Dawn dishwashing liquid and vinegar thing seemed to be the thing that finally got rid of them all.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Thank you very much, Brandy.
And we're going to go to our last caller very quickly. Ricky, you're online with Dr. Burden, and you have just about 30 seconds to state your question.
Okay, I have a tree that has Kubota worms. Can you tell me anything about them?
I've never heard of Kubota worms. I've heard of Catawba worms. You're not talking about Catawba worms.
Right.
Is it a Catawba tree? Because Catawba worms only, yeah.
Catawba, I'm sorry.
Well, first of all, you can pick them off and sell them as fish bait because people love to fish with Catawba worms.
Okay.
Or you could just do in the winter, do what we call an oil spray, and that'll reduce them for next season.
Okay. Well, I just worked. I've never had them before, and I live here on the lake. And
Well, there you go, fishing bait right there.
Got you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, and we want to thank you, Dr. Burden, for joining us again for another edition of What's Bugging You.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me back, Bill.
You bet. You've been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at Red River Radio and our resident entomologist. We'd like to thank each and every one of you for calling tonight. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is coming up next, and next Tuesday we have the Better Picture, and then on Tuesday the 14th or the 11th of September is our next edition of Bird Calls. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Burden, and with help from Tim Schnell, Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Henry Edwards tonight. And I've been your host tonight, and this has been a production of Red River Radio. And we are your voice of the community. Yeah.